Hey guys, I'm Jackie Brubaker, host of the Love You Even More podcast. I'm an author, speaker, two-time Emmy Award winner, and entrepreneur. I'm a Jackie of all trades and a master of some. Each week, I bring on people from all walks of life to talk to them about their inspiring stories in the fields of self-development, relationships, business, and how you can love yourself even more. For more about me and the podcast, visit us at loveyouevenmore.com. Welcome, Comedy Wood, to the Love You Even More podcast. Comedy is back. She is a human potential coach. Today, we're going to talk about helping survivors of narcissistic abuse actually heal. This is not a show to diagnose the narcissist, to ruminate on how awful the narcissist was. This is an episode to really focus on the survivors of narcissistic abuse, what they have been through, and how they can heal to keep themselves from going through this again. Because unfortunately, whether you grew up having narcissistic abuse with your parents or it is something that happened to you in a romantic relationship for the first time, once it hits you, it leaves a mark. And we want to make sure that you understand what you can do to really heal from it and understand what that looks like. So, Comedy, welcome back.
Thank you for having me back.
You're so fantastic. We had such a lovely conversation. I felt like we could have talked forever. But let me just start off by asking you, what is the one thing that you think survivors of narcissistic abuse don't actually like get afterwards? Like, what is something that's lacking after the relationship's finally over and the hoovering is gone? Like, what is it that you think is like the biggest problem?
Oh gosh, that's such a great question, because I think there are lots of things that survivors of narcissistic abuse are either needing or that they don't get. But I would say that the biggest thing is acknowledgement. And I don't necessarily just mean external acknowledgement, because we don't really control that, but it's internal acknowledgement. Acknowledgement of the experience that you had, and acknowledgement that you did survive that experience, and not going into a place of shame or self-blame, but rather acknowledging the experience for what it was and truly honoring yourself for the fact that you did live through that and you did come out the other side.
Oh, well, that's beautiful and very true. I think that is the first thing to look at, because when you're coming out of a narcissistic abusive relationship, you've been taught over and over again by this person that you're the problem. You're what's wrong. Like, you are wrong for every little thing, everything. And so the gaslighting of all of that, and the shame that you carry of, well, I must be terrible. Like, I must be a terrible person. I never thought I was, but I must be, because he or she really thinks that I am and is giving me these examples that also just never make sense, because it's word salad, guys. but really, you're coming out. And I think this is why too, when narcissists come back, you know, they've given you just enough time to like question, like, well, you know, maybe they did have a good point. Maybe I was unreasonable at that. You know, maybe, you know, it does take two, or whatever the excuse is that can be in a healthy relationship a great thing to have two perspectives that it takes two. But in a narcissistic relationship, and then I want you to just like go off of this, like it isn't about two people. It's about one person. It's about one person who needs it to be about them all the time. And you are literally rotating around that. So, you know, with that in mind, like how do they make it about them without feeling, I think, selfish or something?
Well, they make it about them, and they don't have the ability to self-reflect, to recognize that what they're doing is selfish, right? And when you're in those dynamics, you're absolutely right. If you're left with enough time to sit with it, you might start saying, well, maybe I was too sensitive, or maybe they had a point there, just exactly what you said. And the self-doubt creeps in, and then the self-gaslighting creeps in. And before you know it, you're going back to that partner and you are almost admitting or accepting the blame that they were shifting onto in the first place. The people with this type of personality, and again, we're not diagnosing, but they don't have that self-reflective tool, first of all. But second of all, they're never going to be in the wrong. You will always be the one whose fault it is.
Mm-hmm.
And they will, as a matter of fact, if you even try to point out their narcissism, they will then turn that back on you and say that you're the narcissist.
Oh, yeah. And you'll think you might be.
And then you'll start to question, like, well, am I? Am I really that person? Oh, my gosh, maybe I am. And the thing that I always say to my clients when they come to me with that is the fact that you're even self-reflecting kind of points out that you're not.
That's the
because
biggest
you actually
indicator.
Are self-reflecting and you actually have those empathetic tools and the just empathy in general to say, well, let me put myself in this person's shoes and can I experience what they're experiencing? The narcissist doesn't do that. They're looking at it from their perspective. They have to be right and they have to be taken care of. And it's their way or no way.
Yeah, it is absolutely. And it's exhausting too. Gosh, if you're just exhausted, you know you've been with a narcissist.
Well, it is exhausting because if you think about it, normally in those dynamics, you spend day in and day out measuring everything that you say. Everything is a measurement and a calculation because you're constantly walking in eggshells, trying to avoid conflict, trying to avoid getting into that toxic cycle that we talk about routinely, which is, there'll be the love bombing and then there's the devaluing and then maybe we get to some quiet time. And then once again, we're back into the love bombing, right? So it's just, we constantly go around this circle, this merry-go-round. And so when you're on the receiving end of that, you start to become conditioned to measure and take into stock everything that you say in order to avoid getting stuck in that toxic cycle.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's when you really start to lose yourself. And so for people listening, if this sounds familiar, you've probably been in a narcissistic relationship. I think what's so sad, I watched this show, a friend suggested to me, it was a British show. And one of the story, well, forget the title of the show now, but basically it was like five sisters. And one of the sisters was married to a narcissist who was just awful. And so the sisters are like, we should just kill him. He's so terrible. He's so terrible to her. And then they do. And what's so fascinating is that the sister who's married to him has lost herself so much. She doesn't even know what would make her happy. She has no idea. And if she ever tries to do anything outside of the house, like go to a dance class or do anything, he poo-poos it in whichever ugly way he's going to. So she has no identity. And I think because, if you've noticed that, like if someone's in a relationship and they keep losing themselves, mainly it's because narcissists really love to be critical of you. They want you to like look a certain way, talk a certain way, behave a certain way, because that is a reflection of them. And most people, this is talked about a lot, like, well, if you were, in such a terrible relationship, like why didn't she leave? The truth is you may have met that person at a really great point in your life and they saw that and were like, ooh, she's shiny. I want to be with someone like her because she will make me look better. And then you are shining as you do and then they don't like it. And then they start devaluing, and that's when the devaluing starts. And that's when you start losing yourself. And, it can get to that point depending on how long you stay. And I have such sympathy for people who stay for years, if not decades.
Mm-hmm.
How can you leave now? Because your whole sense of reality is based off of their abuse.
Absolutely. And something that I also want to point out, not only do they want to be the person who shines, but they want to isolate their partner, right? So I'm being very intentional not to use the word victim. So I'm going to say survivor of the toxic relationship, but they isolate and they want to devalue you to the point where you actually depend on them for your own identity, right? Mm-hmm. You don't know how to function outside of their relationship. So to those individuals who are looking from the outside in and saying things like, well, why didn't you leave? If it was so bad, you should have just picked up and taken off. Remember, if you're the survivor, those people who are having those comments and those opinions, they're not in it with you. Mm-hmm. They're not having the experience that you're having. There's so much more that you're dealing with. And part of that is you have to find who you are again. You have to reignite and realign with, you know, what is it that you want? What are your needs? You know, who do you want to spend time with? All of those things that have been lost in the context of the relationship. Mm-hmm. And then you take into account that for some individuals, they're in these relationships and there's also kids involved. Mm-hmm. Again, those individuals are in a really tough spot because they don't know, is it better or worse? They're trying to make a decision, not just for themselves, but they're also making a decision for their children.
Yeah.
And it's really easy to pass judgment where it's saying, well, if it's so bad, just pick up and leave. But it's not always easy when you're in the midst of the relationship.
No. And, you know, I also want to point out too, there's the exploitation with money that happens as well. They make you dependent with money. So whether you're married or you are not married and you become financially dependent on them, mm-hmm. then you're also being exploited. And it's so much easier for the control to happen because now you truly are dependent on them. And it's hard, you know, like it's a crazy economy right now and people are really struggling. Like you can find yourself in something like that very easily. And when someone is like, I love you, I want to marry you, all mm-hmm. of the things. And you think, oh my God, they do. And I want to marry them when it's still good. You know, it's still the love bombing stage or whatever, you know, however long they drag that out. I mean, once they have that control, especially with money or if you're married, oh my God, with the kids, like it's so hard to leave. And my gosh, I have a couple of friends who have left husbands with kids that were narcissists, and it is ugly. It is just ugly.
It's ugly. It's ugly. Yeah. Because especially when you're trying to leave a narcissist, they don't, I mean, you're rejecting them, right? Yeah. You're rejecting the relationship. And by definition, somebody with a narcissistic type personality cannot handle that rejection. Mm-hmm. And I don't care if you're a grandiose narcissist or a vulnerable mm-hmm. narcissist or whatever niche area of narcissism we want to say, no matter what, the narcissist can't handle the rejection. And so they're going to fight back and they're going to want to make it look like you're to blame, that they're the victim in the whole situation, that you are the one who caused the issue. You're with the problem. You did whatever, come up with all sorts of stories. I've heard several people who've shared with me that there were stories of infidelity when there wasn't any infidelity. They just make up these stories because they want to portray the other person in this really negative way.
That, you know, I've been through narcissistic relationships. I assume you have as well, because we can talk about it so easily. for me, that part actually was really, really difficult, is just thinking about the lies that they would make up, just mm-hmm. because it's too hard to accept that I would have left, not once, but multiple times. And that's the other thing too, is even if you try to leave, they find a way to keep you with their mm-hmm. words. They suddenly show you that person that you actually like cared for mm-hmm. and they seem reasonable and they're really like willing to, that's the only time they're willing to take like any kind of responsibility is right. truly, it's just a lie. It's all a lie, guys. It's not real, but you know, just a moment, just to be like
a momentary, yes, a momentarily taking responsibility.
Right. Right. So, you know, so they can always be like, I take responsibility. Look, it's like, oh God. But yeah, but then to, you know, really finally get the courage to leave, because the other thing, and I really want to like stress this for survivors, is that leaving is so hard. Like you just talked about, people are like, why can't you just leave? And I have absolutely been asked that before. I was with a narcissist for 4 years, maybe 3.5. Let's just bring it down to 3.5. longest 3.5 years of my entire life. It was awful. And everyone was like, why can't you leave? And I'm like, it is so much more complicated than that. It is abuse. It is so intertwined. It is so complicated. But when you finally do get to a place where you are strong enough to leave, it's terrifying. There's a true fear that comes up. And that's why so many people don't end up leaving, even though everything wants to go, they want to leave. There's this disgusting trauma bond that's been created of between these two, you know, you and this person, and this fear of, can I do it on my own?
Oh, yeah. 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 Because it's conditioned behavior, right? It's conditioned thought.
Mm-hmm.
It becomes, and you're right, it's a trauma bond, and we get so enmeshed in that relationship and that dynamic, but it is really conditioned thought and conditioned behavior. It's such a deep-seated fear that I can't do this on my own, or I'm not going to be okay on my own. And it's to remind people who are choosing to step out of those relationships that, yes, it is scary. We can't deny it. And I think anybody who tries to lean into toxic positivity, it's just, it's not helpful. Instead, it's about acknowledging, yes, it's scary. Yes, it's really hard. Yes, it's going to be super uncomfortable. And also, it is your choice to give yourself and take back that power, right? Give yourself the power and take back that power that this person has taken from you for however long you've been in the dynamic.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, when I left the last narcissist, there were only two, thank God. Too many. too many. I literally thought I was going to spontaneously combust. I couldn't wait like one more minute of my life before I had to break up with this person. Like, there was so much fear. And at the same time, I was like, but I think I might die. Like, literally, I think I might just die. I've never felt such a somatic feeling of like, you have to do this right now. And I'm like, yes, right now. But the relief that comes, and for anyone listening who's trying to leave but hasn't done it yet, there is an enormous relief and enormous fear. But the strength that you need to rely on people who love you, and you need to please get into therapy immediately, and get into some kind of a support group, whether it's your friends or your family, spiritual, whatever it is, find people who are going to keep you supported, because it is terrifying. And like we said, some time will pass and you'll be like, well, maybe I overreacted, or maybe it wasn't as bad as I thought. Maybe they were trying and I just was too wrapped up. All of the excuses in the world will not be true. Trust me. Trust us. They are not true. But really do find the support to keep going. And I'm also going to point in there, create something. As tired as you are, start a project or a hobby, or create something that you can throw yourself into if you're able to. Not everyone is able to, but even if it's as simple as driving to work and learning Spanish in the car for 30 minutes, just something that you're like, I do this every day. And this is mine, and it's something to focus on that is not connected to them. It's just mine.
Yeah, I love what you're saying, and really what it comes down to is starting to create your own rituals, your own, not just patterns, but your own, for lack of a better term, rituals, your own ways of showing up for yourself each day. So if the ritual is learning a foreign language, or the ritual is going on a walk in a specific location so that you're creating that ritual for yourself, or getting into art and creating art, if maybe that's been something that's been untapped for the last how many ever years, right? It's realigning with those pieces of yourself that are just for you.
Yeah.
It's really important as you're coming out of this. The other part that I want to say is, yes, support, absolutely. And being really diligent with who you choose to support you, meaning being careful with, picking people who are not going to covertly shame. Right? Because sometimes people don't mean it, but they do say things that are covert ways of shaming. So we just have to make sure that the people that we're surrounding ourselves with are just, they're there to support, they're there to listen, they're there to hold us and help us with that walk as we're making that walk through the healing. The other part is recognizing that most of the healing is going to happen after you leave. Because it's very difficult to fully heal when you're still in it. So those people who are choosing to stay for whatever reason, and I have no judgment whatsoever, if you're in a situation where you're just like, I can't go right now, at least take steps to take care of yourself within the dynamics of the relationship. So find ways to set boundaries for yourself. Find ways to, implement some self-care when it's just about you, so that even when you're in it, you're doing certain things that where you're still making yourself important and you're not constantly giving in to the other person and into the abuse that you're facing. Because most often it's verbal and emotional abuse, and sometimes it is physical. You mentioned financial abuse. All of those are very commonplace in these dynamics. Mm-hmm. But then after the fact, be really graceful with yourself, because that healing is going to take time, because these relationships they're traumatic. And our nervous system, those who have been through this, one's nervous system holds on to those memories, and it does take some time to work through that.
It really does. What are some great ways for people to start healing their nervous system after something like this?
Oh, that's such a great question. The very first thing that I would say is to start paying attention to where your nervous system is. That's step number one, is recognize, what state am I in? Am I in a regulated state, or am I in sort of a fight or flight state? Some people might even find themselves in more of a freeze or fawn state, but paying attention to where your nervous system is currently. Once you've identified that, then taking steps to start re-regulating. You know, that might be doing some somatic work, like breath work is amazing. Huge. Meditation is wonderful. Mindfulness practices are great, but really getting into some somatic practice in order to re-anchor and to reestablish your nervous system, because that's step number one, is moving you back into this place of safety and connection with self. Once you're there, then you can start working through the cognitive part of it, right? If you try to just go right into the cognitive, you might have some success, but ultimately your body still has to heal as well. So that's why I always say start with the body first.
That's such great advice, because I think, you know, especially these days, I feel like people don't listen to their bodies at all, you know, unless you're really focused on, I'm listening to my body and I'm doing this kind of work. Most people are like, I can like either A, intellectualize this away, or B, not think about it at all.
I'll just ignore it.
You just completely doesn't exist anymore. But you know, I've done a lot of somatic work since my last narcissistic relationship, and it has really changed me, because your body, I mean, this is a whole episode on its own, but it's like, your body holds so much trauma, and it's not just, like you said, regulating yourself. It's really trying to get that trauma out of your body. I just started this amazing new book, and again, this is its own episode too, but it's called The Autoimmune Cure, and it's all about why people get autoimmune diseases. And not to scare anyone, it is hereditary, so keep that in mind, but it's also caused by stress, environmental, and a trigger such as a narcissistic relationship. So it's like, we need to pay attention to our bodies. We need to do that somatic healing. Breath work is amazing. I finally discovered breath work this year, and it has been life-changing. Is this stuff that you do in your practice? Do you do somatic work with your clients?
I do.
Okay, good.
I actually, it's so funny. My coaching was just focus on cognitive. And I noticed that there's something more. And then I kept digging, and I realized, oh my gosh, it's the somatic that's missing. Mm. And so I do breath work and mindfulness and meditation. I integrate all of that, because
excellent.
Yeah. I mean, if we don't ground and connect with ourselves from that bottom up approach, I mean, we can think all day, but it's not going to solve anything.
It's almost like talking, well, maybe I'm wrong, but it feels like you're talking to your little kid self if you're talking to your body with your brain. You're just like, hey, and your body's like, no, that's not how you're going to get to us. We're just going to like sit here. But that's wonderful to know. So if you're listening and this is resonating, work with Kamini to do somatic work, because it is life-changing, and it's what I really loved about it. Breath work has been by far the most transformative thing. I mean, I've had major breath work journeys that I didn't even know were coming. But what's so interesting about somatic work is that it doesn't seem like you're doing a whole lot when you're doing it. You're kind of like, is this doing anything?
Yes.
And then it does later. And you're like, oh, It is working. It's not like heavy, heavy lifting for the most part. Not to say it won't be, but it's a little bit lighter lifting. But it was working. And why is it working? Like, explain to us why it's working like that.
Yeah, and I'll use the breath work as an example because I use this circular breath work process, which is like a belly breath and then a chest breath and then out through the mouth.
That's what I do.
And I remember the first time that I experienced it, and the whole, like, the first like 10 minutes, I think I was like, what is going on? Like, okay, like, I'm kind of shaking. I'm a little bit cold and sweaty at the same time. My brain was still trying to make sense of it.
Yeah.
And then once I just let go and it was just breathe, just breathe, just breathe. And you got into the rhythm. All of a sudden, tears were just flowing down my face to the point where I didn't even know what was happening. It was just such a release.
Right.
That's what the somatic work is, right? It's getting to this place of connection with self, and the release just happens.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what you're talking about. It's like, well, am I doing anything? And then all of a sudden you kind of realize, oh my gosh, there's this huge change that just happened. And that's exactly what the purpose is. It's like, it's not heavy lifting. You're not thinking your way through it. Mm-mm. You're actually being and experiencing it. And that's what the key to what somatic work is all about.
Ugh, it's so beautiful. And it truly... The more, it's funny because I'm becoming a marriage and family therapist. And so a lot of my work is about talk. But to be honest, like, I really want my practice to be more about somatic work and psychedelic work. Not that we're having that episode, but to be honest, that's really where I'm headed towards, because we're seeing incredible, incredible results with people, you know, doing macro and microdosing. And I really believe that our bodies are so much wiser than we've ever given them a credit for. And when you go through abuse and trauma, not just from maybe this relationship, but from different areas of your life, because we've all encountered some kind of trauma in our lives. We all have some baggage now, you know, and it's just stored. If you haven't really worked through it, it's stored. And like I mentioned with the autoimmune, it's like, whether it might show up as that, or it shows up in like other diseases or other ailments, your body is screaming, help me, please help heal me with my trauma, because it's stuck in my knee or my elbow or my head, you know, it's stuck.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. I mean, it's an interesting thing. So often people will come and they'll talk to me about chronic migraines, back pain, mm-hmm. neck pain. Well, there's research that has said that those emotional things that we hold on to, right? They're generally stored in our lower back or in the back of our neck. The migraines, that's all of the tension that we've been holding on to. You know, mm-hmm. so our body's talking to us in all of these different ways. And so often we get frustrated by it. Oh, I wish I didn't have this migraine. And we pop some medication to take care of it in the moment, but we're not dealing with the thing that our body's actually communicating to us.
Yeah, that root is there. It's just a matter of, you know, are you ready to go look at it? And a lot of times after a really horrific narcissistic, you know, abusive relationship, you're willing to go fix some stuff, because it's almost like it's just staring you straight in the face, and you have to. You don't really have a choice around it. And as much as you want to not think about things, I'm just saying, you know, just hypothetically, you don't really get that choice. It doesn't really leave until you address it. So, I mean, like, as I like to say, you know, walk through the fire. It's the fastest way to the other side. Do that work now. Don't put it off. Don't think, oh, I just need a vacation. Although you might take the vacation, but, you know, be doing the work while you're on vacation, while you're going to work, while you're, you know, taking your kids to soccer. Like, always be doing the work, because that's what's beautiful about the body too, is that it knows when you're ready for more to mm-hmm. tackle, to work out. Like, we are these beautiful little onions that keep unraveling and keep layer by layer, like, showing us what's, like, you're safe now, you can handle this. So mm-hmm. it's a beautiful moment when you're like, oh, there's something new to work on. But mm-hmm. I love our conversations. What are some lasting things that you would like to tell survivors of narcissistic abuse? And
I would love for survivors who are coming out the other side of it to, one, self-compassion is huge, right? So it would be very easy to fall into judgment of self and self-blame around, How did I even get into that relationship? Mm-hmm. What was wrong with me? What was I thinking? So easy to go there. It's vital to take a breath and recognize that compassion is what's needed, not judgment in that moment. Kindness, not judgment. You can learn from it. I'm not saying ignore, you know, because what we don't want is to set up a cycle where we just jump into the next toxic relationship. So absolutely take the time, but give yourself time to learn from it, right? We don't have to go into it the next day. Secondly, I would say that it's really important to start re-engaging with yourself. So we talked about coming up with those rituals, doing a project for yourself, but also take time to relearn who you are. You know, what are the things that are most meaningful to you? Relearn what your needs are. Work on those beliefs, those core beliefs, because clearly after you've coming out of a relationship like that, you've probably assimilated some beliefs about self, such as I'm not lovable, or I'm unworthy, or I'm not good enough. Take the time to work on those things, because that's where the healing journey really begins, is re-engaging with who you are for yourself, not as part of that toxic relationship.
Mm-hmm.
That's where we start.
I love that. I think it's such a great opportunity to finally do the work on yourself that hasn't been done yet too. As that all starts coming up, just being like, oh, wow, here's this. Let's work on that too, you know, and really prime yourself for the right relationship. Because even though you found yourself in a narcissistic relationship, it doesn't mean that you asked for this. It doesn't mean you were broken. It doesn't mean anything was wrong with you. Nothing was wrong with you. They were a master manipulator and you didn't just fall for it. I mean, they really prep you to believe them. And if you're a good, kind, empathetic person, you're going to believe someone until proven guilty. And then once they do start hurting you, you have all of this experience of them being so good to you that it's confusing. And so I think with what you were saying is, like, don't take on that shame. There's a reason why it happened, and it doesn't mean that it was your fault and you are not to blame for this. So just doubling down on what you said and just taking anything else that comes up as you're healing in your journey, just keep healing it, keep healing all of it. But
yeah.
Thank you so much for coming on and making time to talk about this. I can talk about this forever. I love just helping people heal. So,
and it's such a, I just want to say one more thing. Yeah. It's such a topic. I think that we've just started allowing ourselves to talk about this topic because of that idea of shame. So often people, especially individuals who are in those relationships who look at it as their failure, they don't want to talk about it. So we're finally giving it a voice. So just, I applaud you for bringing it to the forefront.
Thank you. Yeah, it is important. And also one more point, because you just said that. Tell your story, guys, because that is the one thing that they do not want you to do, is tell your story. Just tell your story. Talk about what happened to you, because the more that you hold it in, the more that shame builds. But it's important to have your side of the story told as well, to the extent that you feel like telling it. But just so that you know, you don't have to like hide in a corner and pretend like it never happened, or like you were the bad guy, because they'll tell their story and it'll sound just like that. But you have a story too. And share it with people you feel safe with, and don't feel that you need to hide, because they suck. Oh my gosh. Comedy, tell people how they can find you.
I'm on the web at comedywood.com. And then of course, Facebook and Instagram and Pinterest at It's Authentic Me.
Perfect. All right. If you guys need somatic work and help and healing, go find her. And thank you so much.
Thank you for having me again.